G'day World 159, the Goodbye Australia edition. G'day World, it's the 19th of October 2006. I am Cameron Riley. Joining me is Richard Giles. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you, mate? We'll have to start saying howdy and stuff like that in about a week, won't we?
Yeah, howdy, mate. Can't say mate. Howdy, fella.
Howdy, partner.
Howdy, partner. Of course, for those of you who haven't been reading my blog, and I know that's most of you because you're lazy and you don't really care about me, I am moving to the United States this weekend for a month at this stage. Going to go over for a month, lay the foundations for moving the TPN headquarters over to the US, and I'll be going to LA for a few days, and then I'll be going down to San Fran for 3 or 4 weeks. Then I'll come back around Thanksgiving and stay till January, and then head back. And gradually over the course of the next 6 months, the plan is to turn TPN into a US-based operation, because that seems to be where all the action is.
So you're looking forward to it, mate?
Yeah, I am. I'm very excited about it. I mean, it's nervous. You know, there comes times in your life, Rich, when you need to jump off the cliff. You jumped off the cliff when you left Sun.
I did.
And then you hit the ground.
Well, I haven't. I'm kind of hovering above it at the moment, looking at it ominously.
You're like the coyote. You've jumped off the cliff, and you've come down, and you're like a foot off the ground, and you stop, and you're blinking, looking at the camera with a sign held up going, oh, no. And you're just waiting for gravity to kick back in.
That's the one. You know how it feels.
I've been there, man. I've been there for many, many months. But, you know, man, it's you know, I've been talking about moving, you know, to the US for since day one. And I always said, you know, we're going to raise some money here and then go over to the US. But I finally just came to the end of my tether a couple of weeks ago and said, you know what, it's just, might as well just do what I did when I was 17. It's a bit harder when you're 36 and with kids, but, you know, a little over 20 years ago, I jumped on a bus and moved from Bundaberg to Melbourne and had a couple of $100 in my back pocket and a change of clothes and a guitar. And it was like, well, I'll just go to the big city and figure it out. Can't be that hard. And that's exactly how I feel right now. It's like,
you just figured you'd muster some sheep or something like that in the big city, didn't you?
Something like that. Pick fruit. I was picking fruit in Queensland. They need fruit in Melbourne, surely.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that feeling, you know. It's like, well, I'm just going to go over there and figure it out. I don't have any plans, but it's amazing, man. You know, once you, I don't want to get all philosophical on your ass, but you know, once you make decisions and you sort of set a course and you, once you make that decision in your mind, like, right, that's it, I'm going, and you book the ticket and you just set a course, stuff tends to happen. You know, I'll tell you a story because I like this. I think this is a great example of how you make your own luck. About, well, you know that when we launched TPN, I'll go back even further, right? This is thin threads and relationships and networking. About 3 or 4 years ago when I was still at Microsoft, and I had a blog, one of my early blogs, I started, I wrote about a software product that I'd been testing with that was sort of a productivity type tool. And I get an email from a guy called Buzz Bruggeman, and Buzz says, hey, Cameron, I was just reading your thing about on your blog about that product. If you like that, you should really check out ActiveWords. I'm the CEO of ActiveWords, and I think you'll really like it. And if you, if you want to hook up, you know, I'll do a demo for you, a live online demo for an hour. Buzz was based in Florida at the time. And I sent him back an email and said, yeah, man, that'd be great. And we developed a very quick friendship. Buzz is the world's biggest networker. And then I went over to the US and we chatted a bit while I was over there and we Skyped and he was trying to figure out how he could engage better with Microsoft in the US. So I spent quite a bit of time coaching him and his partner Pete Weldon on, you know, how I thought Active Words should engage with Microsoft, and, you know, we developed a friendship. And then after I started TPN, Buzz was one of the first guests on G'day World, and he promoted TPN to Doc Searls and all these sorts of people, got all of the early guests, and I've always said, you know, Buzz and Frank Arrigo are sort of the godfathers of the G'day World show. And then fast forward to sort of February 2005, we were launching TPN. Buzz was at going to a conference called the Demo Conference in Arizona, and he said, hey, you should come over here, man. You would absolutely love it, and I can introduce you to all these cool people. And I said, well, that's great, but I can't afford the, you know, $5,000 ticket or whatever it was. And he said, well, that's all right. I know the woman who runs it, Chris Shipley. I'll shoot her a mail and suggest that she gives you a press pass. So, which he did. She did. He said, Cameron runs this podcasting thing. He's going to come over and do podcasts. And Chris was like, what's a podcast? But okay. So Chris Shipley gave me a press pass, so I got a free pass into Demo. And I went over and I walked around the conference for a couple of days with a microphone and an iPod and interviewed people on the, you know, people who were attending the conference and presenting there about their products and what they did. And everyone's going, what's a podcast? So that was, so I met Chris Shipley for the first time there. And then when I went over for the sort of a new media event in New York last year that Sue Sharman was running, again for Chris Shipley's organization, got to meet Chris Shipley again. We chatted just for a couple of minutes, you know. Chris is a real big mover and shaker over there. She's very influential, knows everybody who's anybody. So a couple of months ago, Chris Shipley sends me an email. She says, hey, I'm coming to Melbourne for a few days. We'd love to catch up for a coffee. I was like flabbergasted. Wow, Chris Shipley wants to catch up with me. Okay. I said, yeah, sure, Chris, that'd be great. And then she sent me another email saying, hey, I've got someone I want you to meet. I was like, okay. So we go out for drinks one night in Melbourne when Chris is here, and the person she introduced me to is a lady called Vicky Forrest. And Vicky's an Aussie, lives in San Francisco, and she's the CEO of AnzaTech, the Australia-New Zealand Technology Network. They're kind of a non-profit organisation based in San Francisco, and their role in life is to introduce, to get Aussie and New Zealand entrepreneurs, technology entrepreneurs, in front of US angel and venture capital investors. So we went out for a few drinks, and we just had a bit of a chat, a couple of hours over a couple of glasses of wine, and that was it. And I sort of talked about TPN and podcasting and you know, the challenges, the frustrations I'd had in trying to raise capital here and how I wanted to get to the US, but that was kind of it. Forgot all about the conversation. So anyway, on Sunday, last Sunday, I booked my tickets. Had nothing planned for the US apart from attending this digital Hollywood conference in LA for a few days. And I sent Buzz Brugman an email. I said, mate, I'm coming over. I know you're based in Seattle now. Is there any chance that you're going to be down in the San Fran area over the next month? He sends me back an email an hour later saying, yeah, actually, I'm speaking at the AnzaTech conference on November 1st. I was like, holy shit, AnzaTech's got a conference on while I'm over there. So I emailed Vicky Forrest going, hey, you remember me? I'm actually coming to San Fran for a month. Would love to catch up for a coffee. She said, I can do one better than that. I have one slot left open for an entrepreneur to pitch to 100 American investors on November 1st. How would you like to take the slot?
And you went, nah.
And I was like, awesome. And she said, we've got a panel on bootstrap marketing that Buzz is speaking on. I've got a spot open on the panel. Would you like to speak on the panel about how you've built the TPN brand? And I was like, yeah. So literally, within 12 hours of booking my airfare, I've organised to speak on this panel and present to 100, you know, investors. I've only got like 5 minutes on stage, but I was trying to figure out how am I going to set up all these meetings? How am I going to get in front of these people? So, you know, obviously, hopefully that's going. I've got other stuff I'm scheduling, but hopefully that's there's going to be a lot of follow-up meetings that'll come out of that. And then you know, it's just amazing how this shit falls into place, you know.
But and that's why, I mean, you know, I guess what you're talking about is having a goal, but you've taken extreme steps to realize that goal, right? But that's why, and I don't know why I'm getting onto this topic, but it seems apt. You know, that's why people have got to have a goal and they've got to strive for it, because even subconsciously you can end up driving yourself in that direction if you've got a goal. I mean, you weren't to know there was only one place left on this AnzaTech thing, so you're either psychic or something. But you know, it's just important that people get out there and do stuff.
Well, I think there's a couple of lessons in that. I don't want to, again, and, you know me, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I've got the world figured out, but part of it is networking and building relationships, genuine relationships. You know, when I got to know Buzz, there was no, you know, deliberate intent behind that. It was just, hey, he's a really cool, interesting guy, and he thought some of the stuff I was talking about was interesting, and we hit it off. And, you know, and that, you know, thin threads, but you've got to get out there and sort of... I don't like meeting people. You know me, I'm not very social. In fact, I'm fairly antisocial. Which is why I do podcasting, because it means I don't need to actually talk to people. I just talk into a microphone. But, you know, but then you got to get out there. But, you know, Buzz is a cool guy, and Chris Shipley's interesting, and she's a bit scary, Chris, but she's fairly full-on A-type personality. She's sort of person who, you know, could cut you to shreds in a second if she wanted to, you know. But, Tony Goodson's going to join us on the show. That's good. Tony and I have just been talking about some of this stuff. You met Tony at Drinks, didn't you, when you were at the TPN dinner?
I did.
Let's see if we can get him on the line here. He and I have just been
talking about... By the way, Buzz better wear his University of Western Australia T-shirt at the Anzatec thing.
Tony Goodson, welcome to G'day World, mate.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me just put the... There we go.
Wait, let me just put my pants back on.
So, yeah...
At least he's not going off and answering a phone like some of our guests have done.
Yeah.
Well, I just had the Eagles on.
Oh, no. That's it. Thank you, Tony. You're gone.
I knew that would work.
No credibility.
What, the West Coast Eagles?
Yeah, I knew you'd say that. No, my wife's a big West Coast Eagles fan, so she was there. I'm a football widower.
Cameron,
look after the kids.
Couldn't care less.
No. Stop talking about football on this show, guys. You want to talk about football, get your own show. Oh, you do have your own show, Rich. You're going to do an episode of The Gadget Show at any time in the future?
Yeah, tomorrow.
I have all these people emailing me going, when's Rich going to do another Gadget Show? And I don't know. You know, Rich.
Tomorrow.
Who you got on?
I've got a guy named Trey on the show tomorrow. He does some interesting stuff on two levels. He does a whole heap of really cool photographs and does them in high dynamic range, HDR, for Flickr. So I'm going to have a chat to him about HDR stuff. But he also runs a gaming company, and he travels around the world. It's just ridiculous stuff. It sounds like it's going to be quite a cool podcast.
Kick ass.
He's in KL at the moment. I'm going to be chatting to him while he's in KL.
That sounds awesome. So, okay, let's talk about me. So for the other people, for people who don't read my blog and haven't been keeping up to date, like Garth Kidd, yeah, Garth, you outed yourself, mate. I was on the, I am this week on the front cover of Australia's leading news
magazine.
Can
I talk about that for a second? Because I was actually going to send you but it was too late. It was like about 8 o'clock my time, so it would have been 10 o'clock your time, and I didn't really want to send you an SMS or anything. And I knew you were on the cover, but it's still different seeing your face/body/bright yellow geek t-shirt plastered across a news agency as you're walking through Northbridge. So I'm walking like, oh man, that's bloody Cam. And I whipped out the phone camera and it was just a bit too dark to take a photo. I'm going to go looking for it. I want a fucking photo of it because it's pretty cool, man.
Media whore.
Well, you know, it's...
You slag the media off, and then as soon as you get the picture, you're on there.
What can I tell you, man? They continue to serve a purpose for those of us that want to promote our fledgling new media companies. But, yeah, look, it's pretty funny. The Bulletin magazine, which is, it's not a huge magazine. It's got a circulation of just over 60,000.
It's been around since 1890-something.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that, when they get to the level where they have to put my photo on the front cover, they've pretty much run their course. I mean, I think it's the Bulletin has jumped the shark when they've got me on the front cover. I said to the photographer, which was actually probably the coolest part of it. Well, let me tell you the story. Okay, so here's another example.
I also want to know how you ended up wearing that T-shirt, so include that in the story.
I will. And, Tony, before you came on, I was talking about how a lot of thin threads came together around this trip I'm making to the US. And
yep.
You know, I've ended up you know, I'm speaking to 100 VCs like the second day after I arrive in San Francisco at an event I'm on stage pitching to them.
Wow.
But it comes back through a thread of relationships and networking that goes back about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Where I got to befriend a guy over there and helped him out, and he introduced me to a woman and she introduced me to someone else. And, you know, I was talking about how you kind of make your own luck. You got to get out there and just put yourself out. But here's another story. So, my relationship with Josh Glidden at the Bulletin, he's the journo who wrote this article, goes back to February 2005 when we launched TPN. Josh, who I think had been listening he'd been listening to G'day World, I think, and he called Mick and I up and said, hey, I'd like to do a story on you for the Bulletin. We were like, yeah, great. So he interviewed us over the phone. I think Mick might have, because Josh is based in Sydney where Mick was, and I think they may have done it in person. And they wanted to do a photo session with both of us, but I was going to the US for the demo conference in Arizona. So they ended up doing a photo of Mick, and they did it. And Josh did a 2-page spread on us in the Bulletin, that, like, literally the week we launched TPN. We had mainstream media coverage in Australia, which was very cool. And so we got to know Josh, and he's in my Skype list, and, you know, I've caught up with him a couple of times for a coffee in Sydney when I go up, and I've helped him out with stories over the last couple of years. You know, again, this comes back to building relationships with people. Yeah, a couple of the journos that I know quite well in this country, Mark Jones at The Fin and Josh at The Bulletin, you know, they'll ping me from time to time and say, hey, man, I'm doing a story on X. Do you know anybody? Have you got any quotes? What do you know about it? And, you know, I'll put myself out and spend half an hour chatting to them or connecting them up with people and just helping them out, right? Not for any payback, but, you know, they're mates and you help mates out. Excuse me, I've got a cough. I'm going to put my microphone on mute.
Wow. I wish we had that
silence
button over here.
I don't know what to do with it.
If we had that button here, it'd be marvellous, wouldn't it?
Shut the fuck up. So anyway, a couple of weeks ago, Josh calls me. Actually, it was only last week. It was about a week ago. Wednesday last week or something, Josh calls me up. And he's going, mate, I heard you say on the show that you're going to San Francisco. What's going on? And I just started talking about, you know, why I was going and the frustration with the investors in this country and blah, 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 blah. And we were just having a yarn. And he said, oh, that's great. Listen, I'm thinking about doing a story on Aussie Web 2.0 companies. And I said, well, you need to talk to Rich and you need to talk to Nick Kubrilovich and Marty Wells and Ben Barron and, you know, James Farmer, except now James has betrayed us all by slagging off new citizen media in The Age. He can get fucked.
Being paid by the man.
So, you know, I just started running through a list of people that he should talk to, and that was the kind of thing. So then he calls me up a day later and says, hey, mate, thanks very much. You know, we're going to run this story, and we'd like to send a photographer out to take a photo of you. And I was like, yeah, cool, okay. And then Roxy, the photo editor of the Bulletin, called me up, and she said, well, we want to do this pretty quickly. Can we send Julian Kingmar, who's one of Australia's leading celebrity photographers, is going to come out and see you on Saturday? And I was like, yeah, that's cool. She said, all right, I'll give him your number and he'll call you up. She said, by the way, we want this, we think we might be able to get a cover shot out of this. We might be able to make this the cover story. Well, I'm going to send a stylist out to make you look good. And I said, well, yeah, that's cool, but...
And how many hours did that take?
I said, well, no, hold on. I said, well, that's cool, but... You know, I've got a you know, nice suit, nice shirts, and she said, well, we want it to be really iconic. And I said, well, look, I've got these Elvis sunnies. And she said, oh, yeah, I've seen the Elvis sunnies. I saw the photo that you had in the Fairfax papers with them. She said, look, they're great, but I really don't think they're going to be right for our audience. We have a fairly conservative, you know, business audience. I said, Roxy, trust me, the Elvis sunnies are going to make the shot, but it's up to you. You're the boss. You know what you're doing. So anyway, Julian Kingmar, the photographer, and this guy does all the big celebrities when they come out to Australia. He's been telling me about Samuel L. Jackson and Jamie Oliver and everyone he shoots who comes through. I said to him, he rang me up and he said, look, you know, for the front cover shot, we want to have you in a suit, but then we want something for the inside shot that contrasts that. And I said, mate, I have got this bright yellow T-shirt with geek written across it in big black letters. What do you reckon? And he said, oh, perfect, just perfect. Bring that in a pair of jeans. So I had my own wardrobe. So we met down at Hosier Lane in Melbourne, which is sort of the main graffiti lane in Melbourne. And we did a bunch of shots with me with the geek shirt and the Elvis sunnies, some on and some off. And then we did the suit shots, again, with sunnies on and sunnies off. Of course, all of the shots that they used in the magazine and online are all with the sunnies. And Tony and I were talking about this before. I mean, the sunnies is a deliberate thing. I mean, I bought the sunnies in L.A. A couple of years ago, again, when I was over there, demo, I bought the sunnies because I've always been a fan of those Elvis sunnies, and I've always wanted a pair, particularly since Christian Slater wore them in True Romance. And then I was down at Venice Beach in L.A., and I saw them for sale for $10, and I was like, oh, I got to get me some of these. These are just the greatest. So it was kind of a bit of a joke, but I thought, you know, it's good for a laugh. But then I realized, you know, when you study what makes people memorable, you know, you go back through history, obviously it's what you do is one thing, but a lot of people have had a prop. You know, I obviously am the big Napoleon fan. Napoleon had the hat. You draw a person and you put that hat on, everyone knows it's Napoleon. You draw a head and you put a little rectangular mustache on it and a comb over, it's Hitler. You put a fat guy with a cigar, and it's either Winston Churchill or Alfred Hitchcock, or maybe Orson Welles for people that are into film. Yeah, there's only three fat guys with cigars. You know, in this country, you know, the big bushy eyebrows, who is it?
Howard.
Howard, you know, short guy with big bushy eyebrows and, you know, Coke bottle glasses or something. So anyway, the Elvis sunnies I deliberately have used as a prop to try and, you know, be identified as the guy in the Elvis sunnies in the last couple of years. But for the media, and I guess this comes back to, I was talking with a mate of mine, John Michael, yesterday, he's written a couple of books on personal branding. He's sort of an image branding coach guy. And we were talking about, you know, how you get into the mainstream media. And obviously, first of all, you have to do something of note or something different. But also, it's the look. If you have a look that's a bit unique or a bit different, that helps as well.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. So, Tony, you were writing some interesting stuff on IM to me before about...
Yeah.
Run over that, because I thought that was good stuff.
Yeah, it's actually something taken from a company called... BSRP, Behavioral Sciences Research, and they do a sales psychometric called SPQ Gold. But part of their training is looking at what makes people successful, and what makes people successful are people who are self-promoters. Yeah? So it's not that they're the most talented, but that they have an ability to self-promote themselves.
Got to have a big mouth.
Big mouth, that helps. But also, it's something... Well, there's three things. One is they network. They ask themselves, who can I talk to who will make a difference to me today? Yep. Or who do I know? Secondly, they stick at things despite all their setbacks. Yeah. And the third thing is they have a memorable style. They're either born with it or they've developed it. Yeah. Mm. So an example is... Give me some examples of some world-famous self-promoters.
Richard Branson.
Richard Branson, that's a great one.
Who else? He's the perfect one, right?
Go on, give me some more.
Bill Gates. Bono.
Bono, brilliant. What about people who irritate you because they've got no... Well, we better be careful here. But they've risen beyond their talent.
Me.
You, yes. That's a very good example.
Tony said to me on this IM thing, yeah, do you want to know the route of success and riches beyond your talent? And I said, mate, I think I've already overreached my talent. But yeah,
and I agreed.
Yeah,
but you often get, you know, Madonna, the Spice Girls, a couple of sports people, Anthony Mundine, you know, people like that. But what they are is good self-promoters. They do those three things.
Salespeople.
Well, let me.
That's what we train them. That's the training that I do. Yeah.
But let me go back a step there. You know, you're talking about networking before, and who can make a difference to me. But I think the key thing, and I've learned this from a number of people by watching people over the years. And Buzz Brueggemann is a classic example.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, it's not just about networking for your benefit. Buzz, absolutely, the way he networks with people, and I remember him telling me on the show a couple of years ago that he had 11,000 people in his contact list.
Yeah.
But I think he speaks to every one of them once a week. And he doesn't just ring them up. He he has this system set up where, at least in the early days of our relationship, we don't do it so much anymore, but I mean, he still sends me an email, you know, every couple of weeks. But in the early days, he would send me emails with links to blog articles or mainstream media articles around stuff that he thought would interest me. Hey, Cameron, I just read this and thought of you. Hope it, you know, hope you get some value out of it. He was always adding, trying to figure out ways that he could add value to me, not what he could get out of me. I mean, he's one of these guys who, he's, you know, the classic connector or maven in that and he's always pitching other people's stories as well. That's the other thing. What are those headphones? These bloody headphones that he's been pimping for the last couple of years. In the same way that he pimped G'day World to everyone he knew earlier on, he has this guy he knows that runs a company that makes these really great headphones. And Buzz just pimps these things everywhere he goes. He's always talking about the headphones. And whenever anyone says to me, hey, I met Buzz Brugman, I said, did he tell you about the headphones? Yeah. He's always, he's got nothing to gain out of that. He doesn't own the company, doesn't have the stock, but he's always promoting people he knows to other people he knows and adding value and connecting people up. And consequently, everybody loves Buzz and everybody remembers Buzz because of this thing that he does, you know?
Yeah.
The thing that Buzz does. Buzz does.
There's something else you mentioned before about creating your own luck. And there's a very good book called The Luck Factor, which Scott Adams has talked about, the Dilbert guy, recently in his blog. Now I'm just seeing who it's by. Wait a minute. Luck Factor. Richard Wiseman. So that's he's researched why people are lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And so he for his research, he took the most lucky people in the world and the most unlucky people in the world and then got them to do the lottery. So what do you think happened when they all did the lottery?
They came out 50-50.
Exactly, nothing. So on random chance, they're all the same. But if you look at most things in life, it's a matter of luck, which you can influence and create by doing certain things.
And that's like what, I mean, and I guess that's why I think I thought about goals when, you know, Cameron was talking earlier when you weren't dialed in, but he was talking about, you know, how things have occurred for him. And I said, well, if you have goals, it's just amazing how you can subconsciously influence the way that you're going. I've had about 10 years ago with, Nicholas Negroponte. I read his Being Digital book and I thought, oh man, you know, like he's a really interesting guy. You know, he's written a book. He travels around doing presentations, obviously pretty smart and respected. And so I set myself the goal that I wanted to be like him. My goal's changed since then, by the way. I'm probably taking a different tack by starting up a company, although he did MIT, I think.
Now you want to be like me, right?
Now I want to be like him. I want to be on the front cover of Bulletin. But it's amazing how things have happened for me. And, you know, so I've ended up writing a couple of books. Now, they're not exactly the type of books that I wanted to write. But did that just happen by chance? Or was it the fact that I'd had a goal in mind and taken steps, even if they were small steps, along the path of obtaining that goal and along the way have ended up, you know, architecting the chance to write a book or two?
Yeah. It works on the micro level as well. So in the Luck Factor book, he does an experiment where he takes his most lucky person and most unlucky person and asks them to walk into a cafe. And the cafe is set up so that all the tables are full. So the lucky guy walks in and sits at a table where someone else is and engages that person in conversation. And that person happens to be the CEO of an organization. You know? The unlucky person walks into a cafe, sees all the seats are full, goes and sits in the corner and doesn't talk to anyone. And it's kind of those small things which make a difference.
You know, when I did the interview with Jeff Lord, the Melbourne businessman, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about making mistakes. And I think that's another big difference I see between people that seem to achieve a lot and people who don't achieve as much. And it's this willingness to almost make an idiot out of yourself, this willingness to have a go, make a mistake, fall over, people laugh at you. You said before, Tony, persistence. And I remember you and Spence did an interview with Jason Calacanis from Weblogs Inc. 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And it was a great interview. If people listening to this haven't heard it, you should go and track a copy of this down. Just Google you and Spence, Jason Calacanis, and you'll find it. And one of the things that Jason... Ewan was asking Jason about what it takes to be a good entrepreneur. And Jason, one of the key things he said was resilience.
Yeah.
Gets back to persistence, right? Just when shit doesn't go the way you want it to, which is just going to happen. I mean, it just happens all the time. You know, you have to have a certain resilience where you go, okay, what can I do? So I've said on this show a number of times recently, the questions that you ask yourself in those situations determine your reality. How can I use this to my advantage?
Most of the guys that you name as famous self-promoters, there's always early video of them or early TV interviews when they were kids or teenagers. So somebody like Branson, there's an interview of him aged 17 at university being interviewed. David Beckham, there's an interview when he's 7 years old. So most people who become famous, there's early footage of them before they were famous. So
they've been working at it for a long time. Yeah.
10, 20 years.
But the other famous quote, and I'm paraphrasing, is it's not all of the successes that actually make us. It's all the mistakes.
Absolutely.
Even Johnny Howard's on a radio show aged 15 in the 50s.
Hey, just final thought, and I've got to go. Quick show today. My last show in Australia, ladies and gentlemen.
No.
Until I come back.
No. You come back a billionaire.
Hey, I'm nearly Aussie.
Well, there you go. We're exchanging places. You're becoming an Aussie, I'm becoming expat.
Can I practice some Aussie words, please?
Yeah, give us a couple.
No, you've got to give me a good day, mate, and all that.
Yeah, well, say good day, mate.
Good day, mate. I've been practicing for my interview.
You've got to slow it down.
G'day, mate.
That's better. A bit better. But you either have to slow it down or speed it up. It's either g'day, mate, or it's g'day, mate, how the fuck are you? You either have to
But when you speed it up, you've got to drop letters.
Yeah, and it's got to be like no spaces whatsoever. It's just a complete, blast out.
G'day, mate.
That's close. And you need to listen to a lot of Chisel and Angels.
Okay.
I was listening to the Angels this morning. Went down to Saint-Tropez where Renoir paints the walls. Look, my final thought on this little, motivational episode that we're doing today. I pulled a book off my bookshelf before that I haven't read for 20 years. It's called The Psychology of Winning by Dennis Waitley.
Yeah.
Who was, in the 80s anyway, sort of fairly prominent motivational author and speaker. I don't know what the hell he's doing today. I don't know. Like most of those guys, he probably got caught with a 14-year-old hooker and a bowl of cocaine. Not a bad book. And I was just sort of flicking through it at random, thinking, because one of the things I have to really manage is my self-talk. I've been working with my shrink over that for the last few years because, I tend to get into these situations and say, you're going to fail. You're going to go over there. Nothing's going to work out. I tend to, I have this sort of negative internal monologue going on that my dad gave me. Thanks very much for that, George. So I pulled this out. Anyway, it was sort of just flicking through at random, and one thing that really jumped out at me, and he said, break habits. He said stuff like, turn your TV off for a month, unplug it for a month, and just break your routine, break your habits, force yourself to grow and move in different directions. And I think that's really good. I actually did that when I was in my very early, late teens, early 20s, 19, 20, 21, something like that. I actually gave away my TV for a year. I didn't have a television for a year and forced myself to read every night instead of doing the easy thing, which would be watching TV, right? And that's, kind of partly what this trip to the US is all about for me. It's like, okay, let's do something completely different. Let's just change this.
When did you decide to do it?
A week and a half ago.
Really? And you're just going to go there for a month and see what happens?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm going. I mean, I'm going there for this first month just to set up what I can before Thanksgiving and everything shuts down. But I was talking to some guys in San Francisco and they were just sort of talking about... I was talking to them about TPN and they were going, mate, you should just be over here. I mean, investors in this country would just love you and what you're doing and the fact that you've built this thing. And I'd been getting increasingly frustrated with the sort of responses I was getting from investors here, which would go, yeah, it's great, we love what you're doing. However, you know, we're only prepared to give you a valuation of, you know, a couple of million bucks. And I just made a snap decision. It was just, it happened all at once, right? I was like, okay, I'm going. And I said to my wife, I'm going to San Francisco. And a week later, I booked my airfare. I went to the Victorian government because I'd met with a guy here a couple of weeks ago who runs Multimedia Victoria. And he'd said, yeah, we've got a fund. You know, we will cover your airfare to the US 3 times a year.
Cool.
To assist, you know, technology entrepreneurs in Australia. So I filled out the paperwork. They approved it to cover my airfare because I'd got no money, as the bulletin article pointed out. And so, yeah, it was just like, great, that's approved, I'm going. And it just made the decision, you know. And it's like, okay, you make those decisions first. What most of us tend to do, and what my gut reaction is, well, let's see how many meetings I can get set up. Let's see what I can get organized. And if it's all looking good, then I'll go. As opposed to going, I am landing on October 22nd. It's like Hannibal, right? Burn the boats, burn the ships. You are going. There is no backing out of this. I did, you know, as I said to a few of my mates earlier in the week, I'm on the front cover of the Bulletin talking about how I'm moving to San Francisco. I mean, I can't back down now. I've put it out there, you know. And the thing it reminds me of, when I left Bundaberg at 17, the last words my father said to me when I was driving out of away from Bundaberg to Melbourne is, you'll be back in 2 weeks. Yeah, you'll be back. And there won't be a room left for you, because he said, if you leave, you're not coming back. That was the greatest thing. I don't think he deliberately did it to motivate me, but it did. It was the best thing. He was like, well, fuck you, dude. I'm not coming back until I've made it, you know?
And so we should explain then the header, or the, you know, the blurb on the top of your latest blog post, Am I Ever Going to See Your Face Again? Which is an Angel song.
Yeah.
And what does the crowd usually yell when, am I ever going to see your face again?
No way, get fucked, fuck off!
So yeah.
What a nice way to finish the show.
Yes.
Yeah, you have to be in the audience. I was thinking when I was listening to that song this morning, because I was listening to the live version of it where the audience was doing that, where did that start?
Yeah, I don't know, because it should be in their lyrics, because it's just too cool.
Yeah, it's not in the original version of the song, but at some stage, that emerged, and every audience that's ever been to an Angels concert in the last 20 years has sung, knows that it's their job to sing that during the chorus.
Even when you hear it on the radio.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm in.
Oh, when you hear it on the radio, you sing that when you're singing along with it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but... But where did, I'd love to know where that started. I'm sure there's a music historian in Australia who knows that kind of stuff. Yeah. Anyway, boys, I really got to go. I can't find my passport. I don't know where my passport is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, go sort that out, mate. Might help.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Well, I'll talk to you from...
Get rich.
Thanks. All right. That sounds easy.
Your new Merc.
From Keely. Shout out to Keely if she's listening. I'm gone. Thank you, Australia, and good night.
Bye-bye.